brought to you by Drama Queensland. Now, in this episode, we're looking at part two of our interview with Red Leap Theatre, where we talk about The Arrival, one of the EA texts for this year. Now, if you haven't listened to part one, make sure you scroll back and have a listen. In part one, we start talking about how they created The Arrival and how they used Sean Tan's book as a springboard for that devising process. In this episode, we talk more about how Red Leap Theatre uses devising in general and some techniques you could use in the classroom with your students, as well as discussing some of the conventions in the production as well. I want to say thank you again to Sam Neill, who joined me in this episode, but also a really special thank you to Julie Nolan, who is the artistic director of Red Leap, but also the director of The Arrival, and Ella Beecroft, who is an associate director of the company and was a performer in The Arrival. It was so great to sit down with them and have a chat about their process and also have them reflect on what is such a beautiful production. So we hope you enjoy our second part with Red Leap Theatre.
I was reading in an interview that you started the process of that adaptation by asking the cast to each read the picture book and pick out the handful of the most powerful images and moments that they wanted to retell the story. And then that's how you started the devising process. Is this a process that you use a lot with your when you're mounting your shows?
In some ways, yeah. I can remember back in those early days of making The Arrival. And in fact, we did some of that stuff with a workshop cast that wasn't even the original cast. So I got them to choose their most powerful image, just one, you know. And then my job actually was to gather the images so it told a story. So I guess the job is to go out to the cast and go, where are your strongest, most interesting, or your most yucky moments, because that's also really good parts of the story. The bits you're like, oh, I hate that bit. And then it's the job of the director or the leader on it to whittle all those things down into something cohesive. It doesn't mean it has to be a narrative beginning, middle, end, or a hero's journey. It can just be a sense of, you know, this is the starting arena, this is our stuff in the middle, this is the end. So we did that quite a lot with our one of our most recent works, which was Owls Do Cry, where we just got the cast to talk to what they responded to. And we just gathered this big basket about things that felt the most emotionally vibrant in whatever way it was, without putting a judgment value on it. And from there, we knew that those were our strong pathways to keep exploring, our kind of little rabbit holes that had lots to mine within them, I guess. Mm. Well, you might have had a slightly different experience with Dakota, Ella.
I did the same thing where I got the actors to say, the bit that they were most excited to make and the bit they were most fearful or really didn't want to make. Because just, yeah, again, it's really interesting as a director, and you can see, you know, you can see where you can push people and they're going to be really enthused. And then you can also see where we're all kind of feeling sticky about things. Sometimes the stuff you're feeling sticky about ends up being the most exciting to make. It's a great way in, I guess, because it also means as an actor you get to be like, you know, I'm so excited to make this thing. And then you can be like, hey, Patrick, you're so excited to make this scene. You lead this scene. They're like, you'll lead the group. When I did it, I got them all, or we wrote them all. I think we did this for Owls Do Cry as well, maybe. I wrote down every single scene they were excited to make and put them on the wall on post-it notes. So they could go over and be like, plunk, and pick one off and be like, here we go. You can make this scene that you are really not wanting to make today. It's like a little to-do list of exciting and scary things.
Really like a nice thing you just said about the fear. Because, I mean, we are dealing with students, and there's so many different pressures and so many different things happening in their days. So I certainly try and maintain that safe classroom for all students, but when you talk about that fear, I really relate to, you know, having that moments where you go in and, you know, you need to embrace the fear to create these moments. And I think for my personal experience, creating those symbolic, poetic images that students have to be quite vulnerable is where I see that most in the classroom. Is there anything in particular from the mounting of the work and the devising process around creating those symbolic images? You hesitated in the beginning?
Oh, yeah. God, Ella, remember making things like those big war sequences and stuff? But I think the thing, I think there's 2 points to note there. As a company who's been devising for a lot of years and we love it and we're comfortable with it, we still get the fear. So we just know we've got the fear and we keep on going. And another really important tool is chip away at the big things. So you wouldn't kind of go, right, go devise the scene where that guy gets killed.
Day one.
6 minutes. And you go, oh, that was rubbish. So if you've got a big thing coming up, I would say chuck in your layers. So you might begin with a bunch of games that get people kind of really energized or get people challenged or super focused, whatever. And then you might add a bunch of quick fire making. Make me 10 images that show terrible fear or your stomach churning or whatever, or make me write me out a whole bunch of things. And so I would tackle the big things in layers. And then there comes a point where you go, you're making this. So you're kind of inching around the thing and then you chuck it at them and say, you've got all these tools. I'm loving this moment, this moment, this moment. You've now got 15 minutes to make this thing. And then I think you're prepared for it to fail and go, oh, okay, cool. This tiny bit was great. Let's grab it. And tomorrow we're going to redevise it. So when it's icky, know it's icky and it's going to potentially take some gentleness to go towards it. Sometimes you find the solution to the icky in a horrible improvisation. They're not allowed to overthink it or plan it or put safety things around them of costumes and lots of props. It's like, get up there and let's just give it a smash. And that's that can be the way to find it. Like, just, it's kind of like you've got to change your gears. You might be going gently, gently, gently towards something, and now you're like, damn it, I'm going to be like that motorbike roaring past. Hurl ourselves at it. We understand the fear.
I think, like, the most important thing with devising and a process of devising is to set up the that it's okay, we need to fail, it's okay to fail atmosphere. That's like the most important role of a teacher or a director, I think, because with devising it's just failing, you know, it's not going to work 85 to 90% of the time. You know. And so you've got to, and it's so challenging as an actor, and it's to professional actors, I think it's the hardest thing, but it's the most rewarding thing if you like it, but it's also the hardest thing to get up there and just every day be like, fail, 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 you know, put an idea out, it's not so good, or maybe, you know, you'll have like, I know with The Arrival, I remember there was one whole week where we made nothing good. And when you've got like 6 weeks to make a show, that's very terrifying. I remember us being like in this week of just everything was not very good. And you just have to keep going. And it's, I guess that's like playing lots of games and having this feeling of fun and support in the cast so that you can jump up, kind of make a fool of yourself. And everyone's like, oh, yep, that wasn't so good. And we'll move on, because you still learn so much every time something doesn't work. Because you're like, well, that's not the right way to go. Let's tackle it from a different direction. We always write a contract at the beginning of a process, which I think was started with The Arrival, and has continued to live in every process now because it was so great for everyone involved. But we talk about how we're going to be for each other in the process. And one of the things that is always on there is that we will fail spectacularly. So go up there and don't be like, even if you know, sometimes you go up and you know that the scene you've made is so very bad, but you can't go up and do it half-hearted. You've got to go up and perform it like 110%, because sometimes the scene that you made that you think is just absolutely terrible is amazing. Like, I know the scene that we did for The Arrival, which was the war scene with the paper. In the book, it's like a kind of selection of close-ups of feet as they trudge through different, like they trudge through the mud. And we kind of were in this group, and the group wasn't really gelling, and we were kind of like arguing a bit.
And sounds like every classroom I've been in.
Yeah. We had like 1 minute left or something, because we always have like an absurdly short amount of time to make a scene. So we're about 10 minutes to make the scene. And I was like, let's just pick up the paper and we'll use that as a like way to create a you know, to create a close-up of feet, because we'll just reveal the feet, and then the, and then we're like, oh, we'll use the paper to like burst through, and then we'll tear the paper up like it's explosions. I know we're all kind of like, this isn't so good, but that was the scene. That's the scene in the show. It was really good. But if we had gone up apologetically with the feeling that what we had to go, you have to go up pretending like it's, you think it's amazing. Because you never know, do you? You never know.
It might be amazing, or there might be something that you can steal from that. And
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
From that, what is your favourite moment of the show?
My favourite moment is the last couple of minutes of the show. Am I allowed to give the spoiler about how it ends?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So the traveller, through all his adverse things, has been reunited with his wife. And that's my favourite moment, because one, I know it's layered, like he's been reunited, but also for us as a company, all the little clues that we planted all the way through are coming into being. So that world of the miniature is now crashing together into real time. The creatures are now crossing over from being attached to one person to being part of a family. Snowfalls, all those things are coming together, and it's so emotional and simple. And I remember really clearly that moment. We had lots of miniature things, and the company going, hey, look at this. And they rolled out the piece of paper. It wasn't a device. We were working on the ending of the balloon landing, and they rolled out the piece of paper, and they did the little miniature family arriving. And I'm like, ah, it's all just clicked into place. And it was such a beautiful way to kind of create this finale, but also I find it really intensely emotional to watch that family be reunited. So that's my favourite bit.
I have so many favourite bits in the show. I love that show so much. Like, I'm trying to think of what my favourite bit is, but I do really like, there's a bit, just a classic chorus bit where it's the kind of showing the passing of time. So we had to find a way to show that months and months were passing for this man while he saved enough money to bring his family over. And we came up with this gesture sequence of kind of a whittled down series of events from his day. He wakes up, he drinks his tea, he puts on his hat, he goes to work, he does his work, he goes home, he goes to sleep. And there's a bit, and then we had it that we all come in, the whole cast, all nine of us, and we're all doing it together with the traveler as a chorus. And it's just such a beautiful moment, because we're all on stage, we're all doing this movement sequence together, and it feels, you know, like in that moment we're representing so many different people's stories, so many different travelers, and this, the universality of this story.
It's a beautiful moment of kind of the simple things that connect us, no matter, you know, where we come from, no matter our past, our experiences. We kind of, there's a routine to everyone's day. There's a normality to everyone, and that use of ensemble work and movement sequence and repetition shows all of that really beautifully.
Yeah. And just also on that note, the simplicity of that scene was hard won. It was so hard to get that right. And mainly because we knew we had to be perfect in those moments. We had to be precise. So actually to get that for a company was hard work.
We spent a lot of time.
So simple. Well, he has a cup of tea and he buttons his coat, but oh my goodness, it was complicated.
Getting to come in at this day at the right time. Oh,
we still were crazy. And also then we backed up and made sure we'd seeded every single one of those gestures at least once earlier in the show. So it's kind of a good little task, actually. See if your students can spot gestures earlier on, like spot the moment that he first has the cup of tea and the moment that he you know, goes to work and all that kind of thing. So they've all been quite carefully seeded all the way through.
So there's a really lovely thing that happens in the arrival, building off, I guess, that ensemble. You have to work as a character. You have to work as a part of an ensemble, but often you're also acting as sometimes an inanimate object and sometimes a puppeteer. How does that work? How do you switch? How do you, make it seem so effortless, but also from a, I guess, devising point of view, where do you pick those moments that at this point the balloon is going to be used by the traveler, or at this moment we're going to see this happen in miniature, but this moment is going to happen as an ensemble or as a chorus.
Yeah, you just play with it, I think, is the main thing. We're just endlessly experimenting with stuff and you find the one that's the most effective. Some of them would really dictate it really easily. So I think there were things like the bodies as architecture when he first went into his apartment. I think literally the task was just given to the actors, make that picture, very specific, that picture with your bodies. So you can sometimes really over-complexify the way that you give a task. Sometimes it's just like, try that. Give it a go. And, of course, because we had that resource, we could actually show, give a visual cue. This page here, you've got 10 minutes to make it. And then I could go, oh, okay, those three bits worked really well. Everything else could just kind of slide away. And we just keep – it's kind of a philosophy of the devising of the company, really. You keep working towards the things that are already working.
Mm-hmm.
When things don't work, we don't really spend much time analysing why they not work or why they might be a bit of rubbish, why they don't work or why they might be a bit rubbish. We focus on what is working and then just keep building on that till it's come to the end of its road, really.
Mm.
So it's really trial and error, wouldn't you say, Ella?
Yeah, totally. And I think because when you're making, you're just making so many scenes every day, like scene after scene after scene, and you're just switching your roles all the time. So we've got, you know, 15 minutes to make the apartment, and maybe in this particular group I play the traveler, and then the next time we do it I'm making the apartment. So we're really used to just switching between our different roles, and then when you're putting the scenes together you start to make some consistency where you might cast, or you know, Jared is going to be the traveler through the show, so we'll recast him in these scenes that we've made where, you know, I was being the traveler, you know, and then we'll make it work. Yeah, you get kind of used to just playing a lot of different, wearing a lot of different hats.
But actually you do the broad strokes. So, for example, okay, bodies as architecture, you're going to make all the internals of his apartment go. And then you look at the bits that work and then you do the refining from there. So sometimes you have to add in the skills, like does it need a particular lift or a particular type of choreography? And then, again, it can look so simple, but working out your timing as your craft can be the hard work. So I think the thing of working in layers consistently is always the way we'd do it. You know, so we made the apartment and we're like, yeah, this is cool, this is working. And then we practice it again and then someone goes, oh, this is the cupboard. Oh, let's put an old piece of fruit inside the cupboard. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, great. And he can respond to that. And then we have to go, oh, crikey, where do we put the fruit once it's gone, or where does it come from? So someone's got the piece of fruit stuffed down the back of their pants, or you know, all those deceptively simple things have come from a lot of working things out.
I think it's really wonderful to hear you talk about this idea of starting as a chorus and then breaking up into different, you know, everyone working as an ensemble, because that's what we really want our students to do, is work together and problem solve on the floor and really work as a team to not necessarily create a work that's full, you know, chorus or ensemble to then break out into roles later on. I think that's really, really important to see everyone equal on the floor and creating these really wonderful moments to then break it up and form a final product, however it may be. And then, of course, you've got ensemble and movement and things like that, which is really wonderful to have that opportunity to work together and see what we can create with different minds coming together to create different interpretations. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I actually really want to talk about the puppetry and what is it like to be a puppeteer, and how similar or how different is it from, I guess, a traditional sense of acting to then jump in to create life through a puppet?
I love puppeteering. I love it because it's kind of, for me, I guess it's maybe similar to wearing a mask. It's very, I find it so freeing because no one's looking at you as a performer. They're just looking, if you're doing your job right, they're just looking at the puppet. So it just doesn't, there's no self-consciousness for me or anything, because I just feel like I become invisible. I just channel everything into this creature. It's so fun. yeah, the arrival was the first. I'd done a little bit of puppetry with Kate Parker, who was also in the arrival. We'd done a show previous where I'd done a little bit, but the arrival was the first time I'd done heaps of puppetry, and she taught us all some puppetry skills. It's fun to bring something to life. It's so magical and it's so joyous. And I puppeteered the little dog type creature who's the traveler's kind of becomes his little sidekick. And it's fun. You know, Kate Park also made lots of the puppets in the show. So she made that that animal, which we called Ref, which was how you spelt dog in our language. And I was like, heaps of people had a go. It was like, you get this, you know, object, and then it's kind of fun to start moving it around. And I find the personality of, you know, you start to see how the puppet moves, how it kind of like waggles around, and that starts to bring out the personality of the puppet. And so it's fun to kind of discover the personality of, it was fun to discover the personality of Ref. It was very doggy when I did it. But then when we talked to Sean Tan, he came to our show when we did it in Sydney, and he said that he'd based that animal on a deep sea fish and a parrot. I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, there's so many beautiful, incredible creatures in there. They all had these little lives. Like there's a kind of cat, a like snaky cat type animal. Yeah. Who Kate was the puppeteer, and that he'd do his performance, and then afterwards he'd have this kind of offstage personality where he's just like the real diva, and he'd kind of sit there and like like sauce powder around. And we had this like also this like real respect for the puppets. They were like performers in the show, so we had similar to like around working with masks, you know, you never put a mask face down, and we'd always put the puppets back in their home like they were alive. We treated them like they were alive creatures, which meant that, you know, there was kind of a no puppet abuse rule, which meant that they really felt alive to us. They felt, you know, they felt like performers in the show, which helped us keep them alive on stage as well, I suppose.
It's interesting that you say that you feel invisible, because I have those moments in The Arrival where you see the puppeteer and your facial expressions, all of you are, they're so much more expressive when you are being a puppeteer. Mm. Is that intentional, or does that just happen as a reflex of, I guess, of that process?
Yeah, it's like a fine line where you become an extension of the puppet. And for Ref, I was making the sound of Ref, which was like the last minute decision, because we were trying to make follow him around with this little squeaky like metal pot thing that but I was always making the noise and breathing, because when you're puppeteering, you've got to breathe as the animal. And so I was breathing and making noise for him just naturally as a way to, it was just happening. And so then kind of on the day that we opened, they were like, oh, Ella, we're going to just put a mic on you, and you're just going to make the sound microphoned for the puppet. And I was like, okay, great. But yeah, there's a fine line where you don't want, if you go too much in kind of making faces and you distract from the, it becomes more about you. So it's kind of like a fine line. I think that's probably working with a director to be like, you know, you're doing too much. You need to put it back into the puppet a bit more.
We had we love the parallel lives of Ella puppeteering Ref, the dog, and it being puppeteered by the actor who played his daughter. So we really love that sense that this creature that found him in the new land, because there's a sense that everyone who arrives, a beautiful little creature attaches to them.
Yes. And
kind of like a soul animal or however you want to see it, it's all good. But for us, it was like a little spirit of his daughter that stayed with him the whole way through. So that was a little parallel. That was kind of something that we kept secret for ourselves as makers. But again, it sort of enriched the role for both Ella and for the traveller as well. So he could look at this kind of puppet, but also get a sense of the feeling of his daughter being back home, kind of reaching out to him. still being connected.
Yeah, I really like that that moment of transference. It's such a beautiful moment when the family arrives and you kind of, as you were saying before, the end of the show. But back on that idea of, I guess, using symbolic images, there's a moment where you have the boat and you're passing the little, I'm using hand gestures. Drama teacher. It's the, I think it's just folded out of paper and the traveller's holding it and it gets passed through and everyone is kind of reaching out as the boat as I guess a lifeline. In that moment, you have these objects where, as the audience, you perceive that everybody is in that boat. So you move from the performers being objects to the performers moving the objects. So this moment of, I guess, surreal transformation. Were those moments, did they happen organically? Like, did you have everyone on stage and were like, oh, well, actually, we need a prop here? Or did it start with the boat and then you added the ensemble?
I think it was a mix of both, don't you think, Ella? There was a mix of being handed an object or an idea, and then a mix of seeing the ensemble doing something and layering in a prop again for that notion of clarity. So let's give the layers of different scale of boats, for example, or different scales of birds or flight or something like that. So I actually think it was a combination of both happening on the floor. Everything with the arrival and the creation of it, all of it was made on the floor. There was very few things. I think apart from Kate really dreaming up the creatures and how she was going to make them, and also her having a very clear idea at the very beginning of things being really working to scale. So she had a very clear idea of a lot of things up on very long poles. As soon as she saw the book, she could see that really clearly. So then inside the room, we needed lots of really, really long bamboo poles to start working out that sense of scale and the puppeteering of those big, tall objects. But apart from that, pretty much everything was worked out on the floor. So they would be given a provocation. Whether they chose to layer in a prop or whether that was layered in afterwards was just how it evolved, really. It was a very organic process.
We're always seeking the magic of transformation, I think, transforming between scales and the most easeful and way, like the fastest way to do that, which is often you start big and then you just go foof and can transform into a miniature by your fingers appearing or by pulling out a miniature prop. So, we're always pushing to find the most magical, snappy way of kind of going between those different scales or between those different worlds.
You use transformation beautifully, whether it's the transformation of, you know, time and place or transforming characters in multiple roles or using that kind of object theatre to puppetry. Transformation kind of links the whole production.
It was very much a starting point. One of our key words at the very beginning of the process was transformation. In fact, it began being kind of reflected in the materials we were using because we had old fridge boxes. So the process of taking old fridge boxes and how many ways we could transform them, concertina, flip them, turn them around, squash them, whatever, became a really key concept in the devising. And then that sort of, again, drifted its way through all the different layers of devising. But transformation through set and design was an absolute key concept at the beginning of the process.
Yeah, because if you have something on stage, you want to use it as many times as you can and for it to become as many things, I think. If you're going to have a piece of paper on stage, if that's going to be one of your materials, you want it to transform into as many different things as possible. I think that's, you know, one about your job. So as part of the devising process is like whittling down what you're going to have and then finding all the ways you can make that thing work the hardest that it can work. Like if you're going to have a big box that slides around on stage, how many different ways can that be used? How many different things can it be? so that it really has a purpose and a role, and all the magic is pulled out of that one material.
From a like a design point of view, you have amazing scenes where you have so much on stage and you have all of this set, and it has this beautiful drawing sense to it as well. And then you have scenes where you just have ensemble members or just have a paper boat, or and you're able to kind of transform between those moments and switch between those moments really beautifully, but I guess use that sense of space really well throughout, that even if there's just one performer on stage, it doesn't feel blank, it doesn't feel empty. It always feels like you're holding space really well and engaging that audience in that moment.
One of the things that kind of drove the direction of the work was a sense of stripping back as we went through. So things would begin very full and kind of tell the whole story. And then as time went on, we'd strip it back to where we were able to tell it with one person on stage in a simple gesture. Mm-hmm. But I think, again, the fullness of that one person on stage in a simple gesture comes from the richness of everything gone before. Mm-hmm. And also within the arrival, I think what you're experiencing is what Ella talked to earlier about the ensemble never switching off.
Mm.
So there's one person on stage, there's eight people on the sides giving all their attention and focus to that person as if they were on stage. And it becomes a notion a little bit like puppeteering. So puppeteering, you give all your focus and your eyeline and your breath to that person or object. And it's the same thing. The ensemble essentially elevates that person by all their focus and attention and support in that moment. So you can have that sense of spaciousness, but we quite deliberately made it very full and rich at the same time.
Mm.
It's a real process getting to that as well. I think like that one of the like trickiest parts of devising is the bringing it together into a line, into a show, because you've made like heaps of really cool scenes and then you're like, great, 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 let's put them all together in a line, we're going to perform it, and then you do it and you're like, that is so bad. It's always like a complete dog's breakfast. I think everyone has that moment. You know, it's just chaos, especially with the array. There were so many props and so much going on, like so much switching between different roles and things having to be, you know, they get dropped off on one side of the stage, they need to get moved over to be put inside a box to get pulled on for the next bit. It was like we'd have, all of us had these big lists backstage of what was coming next, so we knew. So it's like that's such a big part of the process, and it takes a long time of like putting everything that you think is great together, it being horrible, and then having to like move things around, and then, you know, realizing that one scene that was really good has to be changed completely because it doesn't fit inside the show. One scene that had, you know, all actors needs to become one actor, or it's too busy here, or it's too boring here. So it's easy to not give enough time to that process. But that's one of the like big jobs. And I think, you know, again, that being comfortable with failing thing, it's being comfortable with knowing that the first few times you run the show in order, it's going to feel pretty yuck and revealing. And then it gets better and better and better as you go through it.
Mm.
That's wonderful. I just have one final question. We've talked a lot about process and a lot about the show and how, but if you have one bit of advice for teachers listening, a teacher going in exploring the work with students for the first time.
That's a great question. I would say try to build your ensemble, try to get your group together and then work to each person's skill set. I know that teachers never have enough time. I know this and I deeply understand it. But I would say really try and gather your troops and get them together as a united force. Be really clear on your kind of end picture. This is what we want to create. And then work your way towards it unfailingly in terms of you keep your positivity high even when it feels like you're failing. And keep going, keep going. The teacher has to be the person, the last person to give up hope. And you're supposed to sniff it out if you've lost heart. So you need to keep on going and just follow the little bits of gold. That tiny little moment where the two of you turn together, that's working. So build on the gold.
Mm-hmm. That is very right to what Julie said. Also, I guess it's just like that spirit of play. So it's just like we're playing, like just always imbuing the room with that. So it's like it's we start with games, and then it's like we're playing in this world, and it doesn't matter if it doesn't work. We're gonna like really drilling in that it's like failing is good, like just trying heaps of different ideas and not being afraid to try things again and again from different angles. Like don't do a scene to be like tick, that's done. You need to like, let's try do it just as a soundscape, let's try do it. And it's just that kind of constant interrogation and you know, always having a feeling of playful curiosity of like, how can, what's the different ways we could do this, and how can we try this in different ways.
Can I add one more thing to that?
Yeah.
Don't sit down.
Yeah.
You need to work on your feet. Your time for thinking and analysing is afterwards. But when you're making, don't sit down. I know it's hard, but make it a rule. Be on your feet. Be energised. Don't get stuck in your head.
Yeah, I have a rule in my classroom and my students hate it. I say, you've got a minute to vision circle. And I said, and then you need to be on your feet, because they sit down and they have a circle and they talk about it. And then I'm like, vision circling is done. You need to get up. And then I inevitably find they stand up and they just vision circle standing up. And so I'm like, no, vision circling is done. No vision circling.
They like a good chat, eh, the teenager.
Yeah, yeah. So they would, and then they end up with going, oh, I've only got 30 seconds to create a scene because we spent, you know, so long.
Yeah.
So, but it's nice to hear that some of the struggles that we go through and our students go through are still the struggles that you go through as a professional theatre company, you know, creating beautiful work, because I think they go, well, we're never going to get there. We can't ever get there. Really heartening for them and for teachers to hear that the struggle is the same no matter.
Yeah. We're just better at recognising and naming the struggle and moving through it. That's all. And we also know that sometimes the struggle reveals the best gold. So sometimes sit in the struggle and chip away and come away at it from different angles, because that can be the thing that unknots everything.
There's one more piece of advice. One more.
We'll take it all.
Who's the audience? Like, to you, I think often what I've noticed with students devising is that they'll go off and they'll divide like preciously make by themselves until they come to show. But it's so like how we, you know, how we work, and it's so important to like make something really, really fast, show it to your other, the others in your class. And then the people who are watching are, they're incredibly important part of the puzzle. Their feedback is so valuable about, this is interesting, this is working, this is what I see, because then you learn about what's working. You learn maybe something was interesting that you didn't know. You don't get precious about stuff. So really using each other and then stealing each other's ideas and, you know, just working as a big giant ensemble as a class. If you set that up from the beginning, just to like make show, I think it's really helpful.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. I speak on behalf of a lot of people, but I'm such a fan. And it's been really wonderful just hearing all of these inside stories, and especially about process, and just a general thank you for making such beautiful work for us to engage with. And I know that our teachers and our students fall in love with your work just as much as we do. And this opportunity has been really, really wonderful. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, what a pleasure. It's been so lovely speaking to you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We want to thank Julie and Ella from Redleap again for giving up their time this morning. So if you are thinking about doing this amazing production for the external exam in 2022, make sure you head to their website. We'll put a link in our description of the episode for you, and you can check out The Arrival as well as all of their other works. They've got some really great interviews and information about The Arrival as well. Bye. Thanks so much for listening.